Hello, welcome to the Irish NFL Show. My name is Shane Brennan, and thank you very much for joining us. And as we are recording this, we are 1 week to the 2024 NFL Draft, where we are starting to get maybe a clearer picture as to what way our teams are going to go. And I'm delighted to have friend of the podcast and lead NFL analysis at PFF, Sam Monson, to join us to talk about how teams will approach this draft coming up next week. Sam, are we getting a clearer picture now as to what a few teams maybe are looking to do, or is it still maybe as unclear as it was back in February?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, Bill Belichick was on, you know, Pat McAfee's show the other day saying accurate information from teams is not coming out until, you know, 12 hours before the draft. Everything you're hearing now is from external sources. It's from agents, largely. It's from everybody else, right? So we're trying to piece together what we think the consensus or what we think is actually going to happen. But it is largely, it's being driven by sources outside of teams. Like, we don't know necessarily what those teams are going to be doing.
Well, I think there are certainly a lot of things have been keeping us talking. I think mainly the position of quarterbacks like Jaden Daniels and Drake May. But we'll get on to that a little bit later, because the first thing I want to attack is the question around Michael Penix Jr., because I think he's an interesting situation as a quarterback, because they're not quite sure whether he'll go in the second round and the first round. There's a lot of teams that will be chasing for quarterbacks, particularly when we get to the middle of that first round. People are not quite sure what to make of him based on, I guess, some of his performances this season in the college football playoffs. So what is your take on Michael Penix Jr.? What way do you think teams are looking at him? Is there a possibility that he could go, for example, as a first round pick to the Raiders at 13 overall?
Yeah, I think there definitely is. Like, he's a guy that the coaches love. You know, all of the stuff of quarterback evaluation, that intangible thing is still important. Like, how a guy handles his teammates, how the guy just sort of handles everything is still an important element in all this. Washington just had like this whole group of prospects at the same time, in large part to try and evaluate that. Like, what happens if we throw all these guys in the same environment at the same time? Who handles it the best? Who becomes the sort of leader of the room? All those kinds of things. So coaches love Michael Penix Jr. He sounds like somebody whose intangibles are off the charts. And there's a lot of good, the tangible stuff. Like, he's got a good arm. He's got impressive tape in his college career. He's got some really impressive production. But then you get this weird dynamic of his college football playoff performance, where up until that national championship game, we were talking about somebody whose stock is only going up. He's a first-round player. He may be going to the top half of the first round. That incredible game against Texas, where everything is good. And then you get the championship game where not just him, but the entirety of that Washington offense in particular was just destroyed by Michigan. And now the last thing we see from Penix is like this bad game overall. And it's a sort of question of, well, how much do you weigh that? Now he's a second-round prospect and he's, you know, a consolation prize. But ultimately, if you look at that game and you say Washington was just outgunned by Michigan, there's nothing they could have done, everybody had a bad game, it wasn't Penix. If you want to sort of dismiss that or at least minimize its impact, you end up doing a full circle and you end up back where everybody was before that game and saying, he's a first-round pick. He can go in the middle of the first round, the top half of the first round. And that puts him in the sights of teams like the Raiders or the Broncos or, you know, the Seahawks at 16 a little bit later on. I think there's absolutely a chance that one of those teams, one of those quarterback-needy teams, likes Michael Penix Jr. more than whatever alternative they have on the table at that point.
And just, you mentioned there the situation in Washington where they hired or they brought those four quarterback prospects in on the one day. Did you find it peculiar that they brought all four of them in the one go instead of trying to analyze them one by one? And do you think that maybe they were just trying to test Jaden Daniels, who I think is maybe the presumptive number two, to see how he kind of deals with competition like that?
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like it was just the quarterbacks. Albert Breer said they basically brought in everybody. I think they said they had 20 or 30 guys in on the same day, and the idea was to throw all of them into this environment together, which included a top golf trip, apparently, and just sort of see, like, who is the alpha? Which guy are they going to gravitate to? Who becomes the leader in that environment where they're all kind of thrown in there together as equals? You know, somebody is going to become the leader of that group. And I think that's kind of what they were trying to evaluate. Now, I don't know how much weight you put in that. Like, if if the leader of that group becomes the guy that previously you had as QB4, are you taking him second now? Like, how do you, I don't understand how you sort of weigh those elements, but I think that's what they're trying to evaluate is, let's throw all these guys into an environment with a bunch of other prospects and see which one becomes, you know, the leader of that group, which guy do they gravitate to?
Yeah, I think we're going to stick on the question of Jaden Daniels. I mean, he's coming into this as somebody whose stock has been steadily rising. I think throughout the, when we're coming into the scouting combine, it seems the talk around it was between him and Drake May for number two, and that the Patriots would take whoever was left as number three. I think Daniels has kind of taken up a step. He's had a pretty good season at LSU, but a lot of the talk about him and a lot of the warning shots about him is that I think there is a feeling that he is, am I right in saying he's 24 years old? He's a little bit older than the other quarterbacks he's playing against. He had one really good season at LSU. So, and if you were a cynic, you could say he was surrounded by a bunch of 18 and 19 and 20 year olds that probably couldn't get to him in the way that the NFL can. So is there maybe a health warning to go with somebody like Jaden Daniels, who had one very good season and it can show he has an extreme level of talent, but that maybe he isn't the guy to build your franchise on? Or is it worth the risk if you are the Washington Commanders or indeed the New England Patriots to say, this is the guy we're gonna build our franchise around?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, once you get beyond Caleb Williams at the top of this draft, every one of the prospects has something to be scared by. You know, Drake May, all we're hearing this pre-draft process is everybody being concerned about all the layups that he misses and all the easy passes that he doesn't hit. J.J. McCarthy, his problem is lack of sample size. Like, we haven't seen much from him because Michigan ran this offense where they were dominant. They were running the ball. Like, he didn't. They ran the ball 38 consecutive plays against Penn State. And didn't need McCarthy to put the ball in the air. Now, when he did, he tended to be pretty good, but we just haven't seen him carry an offense the way these other guys have. And then Jaden Daniels, as he said, number one, it took him a long time to become this guy. Number two, it only happened when he was suddenly throwing to a whole group of first-round receivers. And number three, he has sort of some concerning elements to his game where, number one, he exposes himself to a ton of hits that he can't take at the next level. Number two, his sack rate is off the charts bad. He takes an absolute ton of sacks as a percentage of his dropbacks. It's a data point where almost all of the quarterbacks in the area that he's in that stat, are bad players, right? The only guy that bucks that trend is Joe Burrow. So all those things together, it's not that he can't be a good quarterback, but there are at least reasons to be scared of him at that position. But ultimately, if you're Washington, you've got to decide which thing scares you the least, like which guy or who offsets the scary things the best with the positives that they bring to the table. And each one of these guys brings something positive to the table. So I think that's the question that Washington is grappling with right now is, you know, none of these guys are Caleb Williams. None of these guys are this clean prospect that doesn't have the flaws or the drawbacks. Each one of them's got something to be scared by, but each one of them has strengths that they're bringing to the table. And again, how do you weigh those negatives? How do you weigh those positives? And how do we settle on our guy? So Jaden Daniels does appear to be emerging as the most likely number two overall spot. But I do think that all three of those guys are live options.
And just in terms of, I guess, what we're talking about, people whose stock have risen, I think J.J. McCarthy, somebody who obviously came in, impressed a lot with the way he handled himself in Michigan season, went on and won the national championship. You may explain there that there are question marks about the steps he's taken, but we don't really know exactly what way he would fit into various NFL offenses. But I think explain why, you know, after the end of the college football season, there was talk that maybe he was the end of a first round, start of a second round pick. His stock has steadily risen, that there's even talk that if he doesn't go in the top three, somebody else may trade up with the Arizona Cardinals and take him as the fourth overall. I think for people who are maybe struggling to understand what the difference is, what he has done in the offseason to, improve his standing amongst NFL coaches that people are considering that he may be traded somewhere in the top five. What is it that he's done specifically to impress people who might go for this kid?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things to unpack there. Number one, the narrative on J.J. McCarthy all the way through has been the NFL likes this guy more than the public does, or more than the sort of draft community, draft analysts do. And to an extent, I think some of this is just as information comes out and as people talk to NFL people, it's kind of bridging of those two things, you know, closing the gap between where random people had J.J. McCarthy and where the NFL appears to believe he belongs. Number two, there is this idea of, well, he hasn't played any additional football since the season, which is true, but NFL people are not watching college games necessarily, right? Most of the guys that are making these decisions, scouts might be, but coaches are not watching college football on a Saturday generally. They're certainly not watching it to the kind of degree that they're going to have to when they're evaluating which quarterback they're going to take in the draft. So some of this is just different people are now coming to this tape, right? It's not that he's doing anything different. It's just that the guys that we're talking about didn't see him do it back in December or whatever. So that's a part of it as well. And then the other thing is there is new information. Like, he hasn't played games, but he's shown up and interviewed with teams, and he's done, you know, he's had a pro day, and he's done like all these different things, S2 tests and Wonderlic scores. And they're all really small pieces of the puzzle, but there's a bunch of them and they're adding up, right? So there is new information coming to light that is beyond what he's done on the field at the college level. So when you add all those three things together, I think those start to explain why a guy's draft stock can move, or at least seem to move, between the end of the college football season and the actual draft. No new football is being played, but there are still very legitimate reasons why a guy's draft stock can go up or down over that period of time.
And just in terms of, I guess, a team, I think when Peter Schrager came out with his mock draft a couple of weeks ago, one of the big talking points that he had, the Giants moving up to four to pick J.J. McCarthy. I think because the New York Giants are sitting in that sixth spot, they have a quarterback, but they may need a quarterback. It's probably one of the biggest talking points of what is set up to be one of the more dramatic elements of the first night of the draft is what the Giants do. They're now sitting at six. Do they move up? Do they try to trade down to, I guess, bolster their options? Do they go for a new quarterback? What is your sense sitting here as to what the Giants do? Because they're in a kind of a tricky situation where, especially considering the media market and the pressure that Joe Shane is under and the pressure that Daniel Jones is under to live up to his contract, even though he's been injured and all the rest. What do you think the Giants will do, and what are their, I guess, their best options now that they're sitting here at the sixth overall pick?
Yeah, I think the Giants are one of the real pivot points of this draft. I don't know that people have a good handle on what they're going to do. You could draft a wide receiver at six. You could draft an offensive lineman at six. That offensive line is still bad, even though they've added some players to it. You could draft a quarterback at six if one is available that you like, or you could trade up. You could go get that third or fourth guy, or you could trade back and say, we don't like these quarterbacks. We think we can get a better deal trading out and letting somebody else draft a wide receiver, and we'll pick up more picks and we'll get guys later on. So any of those, I think, are perfectly live, valid options for the Giants. Ultimately, I think maybe the most likely thing is they just stick at six, pick up the best wide receiver that they like off the board. If Marvin Harrison Jr. is already gone, then they pick their favorite between Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze. I don't feel like they have the runway to just start all over again at quarterback. I think they've kind of tied themselves to Daniel Jones. So if that's the case, their best option is we'll take the guy that we think gives Daniel Jones the best chance of succeeding this year. And I think that's probably wide receiver.
And you mentioned there about the pressure to pick receivers, or to pick weapons that could help a quarterback already at a team to succeed. I think that what makes the Arizona Cardinals particularly interesting, because they're sitting at the fourth spot. They don't need a quarterback. They could very easily pick the wide receiver they want the most. But at the same time, they could trade out and move down, and we're not quite sure what they could possibly do with their picks. Do you think there is a pressure in Arizona for the team to pick an offensive weapon so they can support the system they have going now and Kyler Murray moving forward? Or do you think that they have enough wiggle room that if they got a good enough deal from, let's say, in Minnesota, that they could trade out of that spot?
Yeah, I mean, I think they need to add offensive weaponry, but that doesn't necessarily mean they need to do it at number four overall. So the debate is always, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. is seen as the best wide receiver prospect come along for a number of years, right? How far back you want to go is debatable. Is it just as far back as Jamar Chase? Is he as good as prospect as we've seen since Calvin Johnson? I mean, that takes you all the way back to 2007 if you want to go that far. So that is definitively generational if he's that good. So if he is that good, can you pass on somebody like that at number four overall And if so, what would it take to make you do that, right? And that's always the balancing act with these draft decisions. If a trade is on the table, you know, Minnesota wants to be the team to come up. They're offering 11, they're offering 23, and maybe some other stuff as well. Is that worth the quote-unquote certainty that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be an absolute superstar receiver, right? And the sort of how good he is as a prospect, really what's changing there is the certainty. Like, you are more sure that he's going to be amazing than you are most number one wide receivers in every given year. But it's still a question mark. It's still a gamble, right? There's still a chance that everybody is wrong about Marvin Harrison. He's not actually that good, or he's just a good receiver, not a great one. Like Corey Davis went, what, number four overall, I think, a few years ago, and he was supposed to be a genuinely spectacular prospect, and he's been a solid NFL receiver. Certainly not like a game-changing, you know, offense-defining guy. So there's always the chance that we're wrong on this, and if that's the case, you are better trading down and taking multiple picks and rolling the dice multiple times, because the chances are the composite of that group is going to end up better than a Corey Davis or whatever. So, like, that's the debate that Arizona has to have, is how sure are we that this guy is that amazing? What's the offer on the table? And if we trade back, you know, what are the chances that, like, either the receiver we get at the bottom of the first round or 23 overall or whatever, or maybe we draft a couple of them, what are the chances that that is going to end up better than Marvin Harrison Jr.? Ultimately, I think, you know, if Minnesota is the team offering, or if Denver is the team offering, you can get a trade offer that would be very difficult to turn down. But ultimately, because wide receiver is one of their biggest needs, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. would be a very difficult player to pass on, because he's that spectacular, particularly if you're trading down to a spot that is going to take you beyond Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze. I think this wide receiver class is like three deep as the top three. I think any of those three would be the number one wide receiver in most years. But then I think there is a gap to whoever wide receiver four is, depending on your ranking. So if their trade offer is going to take them beyond where those top three guys are going to go, that might be the deal breaker for them, where, you know, if they were trading back and they were still pretty confident that they could select one of those three, they might do it. But if they're trading beyond that spot, they might say, we're better off just taking Marvin Harrison.
And just in terms of defensive players, I mean, again, not every team is in a sort of dire need to either get weapons or get a quarterback. There are teams, I think, in one of the latest PFF mock drafts that came out on April 1st, that Mark implied one. You have Dallas Turner going to the Atlanta Falcons at the 8th overall. I think what sometimes is missing in coverage of the draft is that a lot of teams in their war room obviously have these defensive players and defensive holes that they need to fill in. And if a player that they like in particular maybe goes to somebody else in a position where they are not expecting, that completely changes their plan for the night. So in terms of what we're trying to look out for on particularly the first night of the draft on defensive side of things, who would be the key players that if they go to certain teams might change the way other franchises look at their draft?
Yeah, I mean, it's really when the first defender is going to start to come off the board. Like, we might see a top 10 that only features one defensive player, which would be pretty much unprecedented. Generally speaking, Dallas Turner is seen as that guy. Like, him to Atlanta is one of the most sort of popular common draft picks to team fits right now. But if Dallas Turner doesn't go to Atlanta, if Atlanta goes in a different direction, whether that's a different edge rusher, whether that's Jared Verse, or whether that's Laiatu Latu, or if they go for a different position, you know, Atlanta could still go quarterback. Atlanta could still go defensive tackle. Byron Murphy from Texas is a guy that has been talked about at that spot recently by a couple of other people. So Atlanta is definitely a pivot point when it comes to defensive players, because we expect the Falcons to be the first team that takes a defender in this draft. I think those are the names generally that are the ones to watch out for those first players. And then the cornerback group, generally, it's like, I think there's a debate as to who is the top corner on the board. And that will be different depending on what scheme teams are playing. Like, teams are not going to have the same cornerback rankings, because not every one of these guys plays in every single scheme. So whether it's Alabama's Terrion Arnold, Toledo's Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean from Iowa is Trevor Sikkema, the PFF lead draft analyst. He's his top corner. I think those guys are probably the top three for most teams. But even guys like Kool-Aid McKinstry, Nate Wiggins from Clemson. I think you could make a case for five different corners maybe being as the top guy.
And just in terms of, I guess, of what teams may decide to shock us in trades on the night. I mean, last year we saw the Houston Texans make trades in a certain way that they could have both a second and third overall pick. And as a franchise, they are very much on the up now. They've given themselves the impetus to be one of the stronger teams in the next couple of years. Do you have a sense that maybe there is a team that could be looking to make a similar aggressive type move? Because we've seen a lot of times where teams will maybe have good draft capital but want to trade back to sort of get more picks in lower rounds or further back. Is there anybody looking to maybe try to get a jump up for maybe two picks within the first round or get higher, and you think that they are the kind of club who could really try to push to get as many stars in the roster as possible?
I think there's always a question of a team jumping back into the first round for a quarterback. You know, Will Levis went last year at the top of the second round, but the Titans were trying to jump into the first round for a while to get him once he started to slide. Whether or not it's whether or not one of those QBs at the front starts to slide, like JJ McCarthy doesn't go four overall and he actually starts to slide a bit, or whether it's a team trying to jump back in for Michael Penix Jr. or Bo Nix or, you know, one of those guys, that'll be an interesting thing to monitor, whether one of those teams jumps back into the first for that guy. But then you've also got Buffalo put themselves in this position where they traded away Stephon Diggs. They have a terrible-looking wide receiver room on paper right now. And maybe the Bills would get aggressive and go after one of those big three receivers that we talked about earlier and make this sort of Julio Jones-style jump from 28 overall to try and get into the top 10 to snag the last of the three, right? If Roma Dunze is there at 9, the Bills could package a huge haul to go up to 9 with the Chicago Bears and get Roma Dunze. The Chiefs, I think, are also a live option for that kind of trade. And whether it's a Dunze, whether it's Neighbors, whether it's Brock Bowers at tight end, you know, the Chiefs have shown that they will get aggressive in the past and go and get a guy and jump a reasonable distance to do it if they think that guy is special enough. I mean, obviously, that's how they got Patrick Mahomes in the first place, was a pretty significant jump in the first round to go and get him, even though they had a quarterback in Alex Smith at the time. So I think the Bills and the Chiefs late in that first round are definitely teams that could make a really aggressive move and go and get a guy.
And one final question before I let you go, and I think I'm kind of curious, that this is obviously the first draft that the New England Patriots are going in post Bill Belichick. They have a history of sort of trading down, and even Gerard Mayo mentioned that, you know, the blueprint to success in past New England teams has been to trade down and to sort of have more picks, you know, with sort of quantity over quality in picks and bring players in and try to coach them up. So considering that not only are the Patriots picking third overall, but they're also picking pretty high in the rounds in future, do you think that there is a possibility that they could trade out of some of their high draft picks to trade down, particularly when it comes to their first round third overall? Or particularly with that third overall pick, is there too much pressure for them to say, okay, we need to look like we're being aggressive here after what was a failed experiment with Mac Jones?
It's definitely possible. I think one of the big variables that we don't really know all the time is what the owner thinks, right? And obviously Robert Kraft there's an interesting dynamic there now, right? Where the Belichick relationship soured at the end. They obviously already moved on from Tom Brady. Post Belichick, Tom Brady wins the Super Bowl. Belichick's coaching career after that was a disaster. And now you have this sort of weird dynamic in New England where it's the blame game, right? And Robert Kraft, or the Krafts generally, have sort of tried to put all the blame on Bill Belichick. And whether it's been more subtle, it's been behind the scenes, it's not been overt, but they've kind of said, it's his fault, right? We wanted to keep Tom Brady, like we wanted to keep the band together, and ultimately it all fell apart and it's Belichick's fault. So now the question is, well, does Kraft, is the thing that he wants, like, I need my new Tom Brady. I want the next guy. I want the quarterback. I'm not waiting around for this slow rebuild. Like, I want the answer now. Or are they able to sell Robert Kraft, and with a new regime in place, are they able to say, look, we don't think the third quarterback in this draft is going to be that guy. Somebody else is willing to give us a crazy trade. We're going to trade back. We're going to stockpile picks. We're going to get multiple impact players right away. And next year we'll find the answer, or we'll make it work with a veteran stopgap, or whatever that looks like. You know, I think they can sell that. I think there's a good argument. But it also comes down to what their evaluation on those quarterbacks is, right? If they, and also what Washington is going to do. Like, if they knew, sometimes you get a draft, right, where we know the first two picks. If we knew that Washington was going to pick Drake May, and then you knew you were working with Jaden Daniels as the third guy, you might have a better idea. But they are probably waiting. Number one, we have to wait and figure out where Washington is going to go to see who the QB is that we have the choice with. But then you have the thing is, what is our evaluation of that guy? Because they might think that this quarterback draft is two names strong, right? And once you get beyond those first two, the third guy is not going to get it done. Or they might think it's four names deep, and whoever we get at three, we're fine because we think that that guy is going to be a franchise quarterback. So these are all the variables that we just don't have any idea from the outside. But I think you can definitely make an argument that the best thing the Patriots can do is, you know, take an offer that's on the table. If it's a team like Minnesota, Denver, like what they would have to give up to get from 11 or 12 up to number three is a huge draft haul. I mean, the 49ers sort of set the precedent a few years ago. They traded essentially three first-round picks to go from 12 to 3, which is the exact spot, you know, Denver's in right now. So that's the price. You know, that's what it can be. And if it's Minnesota, you're talking about number 11 overall, number 23 overall, and probably, you know, next year's first maybe or next year's second on top of that. You can do a lot of good with that, right? And you can come back, and even if all you're doing with it is putting yourself in a position next year to be able to do the same thing, right, and trade up and get next year's quarterback, but you have better players now surrounding that guy, it's definitely an argument that makes sense. So I don't know that they'll do it, but I think you can definitely rationalize that and say that's the best thing we can do right now.
Oh, it's very interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing what way this draft pans out. Sam Monson, thank you very much for taking the time out to lend your analysis to us today.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.